Sunday Night Live. I am Chase Geyser, your host this evening for the next 2 hours. We will be having Kyle Serafin joining us at the bottom of the hour and likely taking your calls at the end of the transmission as well for the final hour. So please keep your phones close by. In the meantime, for the first 4 minutes of this broadcast, while we're picked up by more radio stations, we are going to go back to remarks happening live right now at Charlie Kirk's memorial from President Donald Trump.
Shattered windows, threw rocks, and tried to storm the building where Charlie was speaking. It was a really bad one. Often dozens of police officers were needed to prevent left-wing violence. And the violence comes largely from the left. You don't hear that from too many people, do you? And virtually every day for years before he was murdered, Charlie received these horrible death threats. People don't know. I used to talk to him about it. He said, I got some threats. He always felt that when they actually made the threat, they were not the ones to worry about. The ones to worry about were the ones that don't make the threats. I think you know what I mean. He knew the risk, but he and I shared a certain motto, never back down and never, ever surrender. Just don't surrender, never back down. He believed in it so strongly. So strongly. And he's right. He's totally right. The radicals and their allies in the media, sometimes referred to, as my son said, the fake news media, tried to silence Charlie for a simple reason, because he was winning, and he was winning big. He was taking over college campuses, colleges that had, in theory, only very liberal, or as they like to say, progressive. I call them liberal. But they like to call themselves, because such a beautiful word, progressive. They're the opposite of progressive, if you think about it. But they were really nasty, and he would go into these colleges. All of a sudden, within 2 years, 3 years, they turned into bastions of conservatism. It was really quite amazing to see. They lied about him because they did not want you to listen to him or to learn from him, because what he was talking about and even preaching made so much sense. Everywhere he went, he won the debates, he won the hearts, he won the minds, and yes, he won the elections for people. He helped us, he helped other people. We won the biggest election in the history of our country, I believe. Charlie Kirk was without a doubt among the most influential figures in the most important election in the history of our country. The election of, oh, that beautiful day, November 5th, 2024. Do you remember that day? It was 9 months ago. What a day that was. I mean, we had a pretty good day in the first one. And I must tell you, on the second one, we had a phenomenal day. But a lot of bad things happened. And now that's not even questioned. They cheated like dogs. But we got him back, didn't we, huh? Got him back. But we owe Charlie a profound and eternal debt of gratitude now. Just like Charlie and Erica made Turning Point hot, we are looking at a country that has the chance to attain a level like never before. Tariffs are making us rich again, richer than anybody ever thought was possible. And the only one challenging them are people that hate our country or foreign countries that are paying a price, because they did the same thing to us for years. They took advantage of us, but we're making money. We're becoming richer and richer, and we're taking care of our people better and better when we do that. And we can take care of other countries better and better, but we're doing unbelievably well. The tariffs have really been a hold. The election was big. But the tariffs, because of the election, came in. And remember, other nations do that to us. And Charlie understood that. He saw the money. He saw what was coming into our country, and we can use that for
We'll be coming right back with more from President Donald Trump on the other side of this short one-minute break after we're joined by hundreds of radio stations. And don't forget that at the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by Kyle Serafin. Don't forget to go to thealexjonesstore.com to be the reason that we will always be on the air.
I also notice your cup is stained blue on the inside. I've been caught.
You got a little, did you find some methylene blue floating around here?
I did, man. I commandeered some from Harrison's office.
Yeah, it's JonesStore.com. Check out the supplements we have. 25% off apparel. Methylene blue you can get for 50% off if you get a subscription and you never run out. So,
amen.
I know Stuart's going to be looking for a bottle. I'm going to go try to track one down for him while.
If you don't mind, I'm a bottle of pills too.
You like both. What do you like better?
You know what? I like them both.
Okay.
When I'm traveling, the pills definitely.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's not going to, you're not worried about it breaking open or.
No, on the way over here, I took a couple.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm driving.
Yeah. So with driving, did you feel more alert while you were driving or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took a couple shots while I'm in here in lieu of coffee. You guys ran out of coffee, so I went and got some methylene blue.
That's all he needs is a little methylene blue.
Defending tomorrow, tonight, it's your host, Chase Geyser.
Welcome back to Sunday Night Live. It's an honor and pleasure to be with you. We're going to go back to the remarks happening live right now from President Donald J. Trump at Charlie Kirk's historic memorial. Let's watch.
Officially one came out pretty early in the night. Charlie was live on camera. In that moment, he was overcome with emotion. I've never seen him like this. He was so happy. For a long while, he said nothing. His eyes were filled with tears. And then he buried his face in his hands and he started crying. That wasn't the Charlie I knew, but in thinking about it, it actually was the Charlie I knew because he had a tremendous heart. He just wanted what was good for our country and he saw us going in such a horrible direction. Lovingly, Eric. And this was so beautiful. Erica put a MAGA hat on to cover his bowed head. I like that very much. MAGA, we love. Does everybody love MAGA? Make America great again. When Joe Biden used to get up, remember the speeches? We will stop MAGA. We will stop MAGA. You know, he could barely get the words out. We will stop. I said, can somebody inform him that MAGA means make America great again? How do you say you're going to stop it? And Charlie understood that when Charlie finally looked up and spoke, he smiled through the watery eyes and simply said, I am humbled by God's grace. That was his statement that night. I was watching him. I was very impressed, actually. It showed he had a big heart. Every single American should take a long, hard look at the twisted soul and dark spirit of anyone who would want to kill a young man as good as Charlie. To kill anybody, but to kill a man like this, he didn't deserve this. He didn't deserve this. Our country didn't deserve this. And anyone who would make excuses for it are just out of their mind. Charlie's murder was not just an attack on one man or one movement. It was an attack on our entire nation. That was a horrible attack on the United States of America. It was an assault on our most sacred liberties and God-given rights. The gun was pointed at him, but the bullet was aimed at all of us. That bullet was aimed at every one of us. Indeed, Charlie was killed for expressing the very ideas that virtually everyone in this arena and most other places throughout our country deeply believed in. But the assassin failed in his quest because Charlie's message has not been silenced. It now is bigger and better and stronger than ever before, and it's not even close. And it's rare that such a thing happens, but Charlie is bigger today than he was. Think about it. Just 2 weeks ago, he's bigger today than he was 2 weeks ago. Now, that may not help his friends and loved ones, of which there are so many. It may not help Erica and those beautiful children who have to suffer so horribly through this moment, but they know it's true. He's bigger now than ever before, and he's eternal. He's eternal. And I just want to say we love him. And he's looking down at us right now, and he's saying, wow, that's a great crowd. He said, that's a great crowd. And it's a great crowd of patriots. But that's why I will soon award Charlie the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's the highest civilian honor. And we will do the ceremony at our beautiful White House in a very safe Washington, D.C., a place that Charlie truly revered. You know, we stopped the crime in Washington, took 12 days. Now you can go to restaurants, you can walk down the middle of the street with your wife. You can have your wife walk alone down the middle of the street. She's going to be in good shape. What a difference. What a difference good management really makes. But I'm so proud of that, Washington, D.C. You know, it's one of the worst in the nation, in the world. And now it's considered a very safe city. And it's also, I passed it yesterday, I went through it, and the lawns are good. It's like a different place. It's like the tents are gone, the threats are gone, the gangs aren't there. We got rid of, you know, we took out 1,500 career criminals, 1,500. If you have 3 career criminals, that can make a big difference. But I'm so proud of Washington, D.C., and now we're going into Memphis. And we'll get that one straightened out fast. And then we're going into some others, but we're going to go to Chicago. And we're going to have Charlie very much in mind when we go into Chicago. And we'll get that one straightened out. You have an incompetent governor who, he thinks it's okay when 11 people get murdered over the weekend. He thinks you don't have any crime when 11 people get murdered and 28 people get shot. He says he's got crime. No, they don't have it under control, but we'll have it under control very quickly. So we're going to be doing that. And Charlie loved what we were doing. He was so proud of what happened. He was there to see it. He's so proud of what happened in Washington, D.C. As you know, the depraved assassin who planned and executed Charlie's killing has been arrested and charged with capital murder. God willing, he will receive the full and ultimate punishment for his horrific crime. It's a terrible thing. Because you can't let that happen. You can't let that happen. Can't let it happen to a country. The Department of Justice is also investigating networks of radical left maniacs who fund, organize, fuel, and perpetrate political violence. And we think we know who many of them are. But law enforcement can only be the beginning of our response to Charlie's murder. Over the last 11 days, we have heard stories of commentators, influencers, and others in our society who greeted his assassination with sick approval, excuses, or even jubilation. You've heard that. So have I. I couldn't believe it. Some of the very same people who spent the last 8 years trying to sit in moral judgment of anyone who disagreed with them about politics suddenly started cheering for a murder. Incredible. You know the names. They're major losers, by the way. That will be proven out in a short period of time. Some of the very people who call you a hater for using the wrong pronoun were filled with glee at the killing of a father with 2 beautiful young children. And the same commentators who this week are screaming fascism over a canceled late-night TV show where the anchor had no talent and no ratings. Last week we're implying that Charlie Kirk deserved what happened to him. No side in American politics has a monopoly on disturbed or misguided people. But there's one part of our political community which believes they have a monopoly on truth, goodness, and virtue, and concludes they have also a monopoly on power, thought, and speech. Well, that's not happening anymore. We've turned that corner very quickly. Tragically, atrocities of this kind, and kind that we saw in Utah of all places, are the eventual consequence of that kind of thinking. If speech is violence, then some are bound to conclude that violence is justified to stop speech. And we're not going to let that be justified. The tradition of reason and open debate that Charlie practiced is not a pillar of our democracy. In many ways, it's the basis of our entire society. It's the right and inheritance of every free American, the greatest legacy of the Enlightenment, and among the most treasured achievements of civilization. We will defend it at all costs, and we will carry forward the torch of liberty that Charlie Kirk held so proud and so high. He was so proud, and he did hold that torch high. We will never, ever let it fail. We will never let it fail. But we're going to raise it higher than ever before. It's going to be raised, and this is the beginning. Perhaps it should be no surprise that Charlie, who spent his life speaking with the critics of these traditions, ultimately became convinced that we needed not just a political realignment, but also a spiritual reawakening. We did. And we have to bring back religion to America, because without borders, law and order, and religion, you really don't have a country anymore. We want religion brought back to America. We want to bring God back into our beautiful USA like never before. We want God back. Charlie would have been so pleased to hear his friends and colleagues today giving testimony and giving glory to God. Within minutes of the gunshot in Utah, millions of Americans, young and old, heard the news and dropped to their knees and started praying. Even many who rarely prayed asked God for a miracle. Please, God, save Charlie. But although Charlie's time with us on earth has ended, those prayers for a miracle have already been answered. Look at what's happening. Look at what's happening. In the days since Charlie's death, we have seen how his legacy has touched so many millions around the world. In Calgary, Canada, thousands gathered at City Hall to sing the American National Anthem and raise up posters with the name Charlie Kirk. In Seoul, South Korea, crowds gathered to wave American flags and shout, "We are for Charlie Kirk." His memory has been honored in the streets of Berlin, Warsaw, Vienna, Sydney, Madrid, London, Tel Aviv, and all over the world. So beautiful to watch. A man as far away as rural Australia texted a pastor, "I'm going to come to church tomorrow for the first time ever." The pastor asked, "Why is that?" The man replied, "Because of Charlie Kirk." Can you imagine? The lesson of Charlie's life is that you should never underestimate what one person can do with a good heart, a righteous cause, a cheerful spirit, and the will to fight, fight, fight. Have to fight. We're saving our country. And Charlie's a big factor, such a big factor. Charlie Kirk started with only an idea to change minds on college campuses, and instead he ended up with a far greater achievement, changing history. He changed history. Today, Charlie Kirk rests in glory in heaven for all eternity. He has gone from speaking on campuses in Wisconsin to kneeling at the throne of God, where he is right now. We grieve for the friend and leader that we have lost, but we go forward strengthened by his faith and bolstered by his courage and inspired by his example to defend the country he lived for the freedoms he died for, and the values in which he so deeply believed. He believed in values that we should all believe in. Charlie created something very special. It's called Turning Point USA. And under the leadership and love of Erica, it will become bigger and better and stronger than ever before. So, Charlie, we all want to thank you. We want to say a very loud God bless you, Charlie. God bless you for what you've done. It's incredible. And God bless Erica and the children. God bless the United States of America. And Could I ask Erica, please come out. Erica, please come out. Thank you.
Outstanding speech from President Donald Trump as Erica reapproaches the stage. That turnout is just absolutely incredible. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life. Absolutely astounding support. And like President Trump said, Charlie Kirk, we reopened Western civilization. He reopened the Western world. It looks like we might get some more remarks here from Erica as well. I'm not sure if she's going to say anything. Obviously heartbroken, as the rest of the nation is, regarding what happened to Charlie Kirk, not just because of who Charlie Kirk was, but because of the audacity and the extent of the evil required to bring such a man down in such a heinous and violent way. And we're going to be getting into more of the details as well of what happened with the assassination, what the FBI is doing, how we should be responding to this in the most effective way, with Kyle Serafin at the bottom of the hour, coming up here in just about 8 minutes or so. But there we have President Donald Trump and Erica leaving the stage together. She has announced officially this evening that she will be the new CEO of Turning Point USA, in this turning point in America's history where the Western world has been reopened. And look, I know that this happened a couple of weeks ago. At this point, I know that as time goes by, we as a civilization, as a culture, have a tendency to be calloused or numb toward this level of violence. But I firmly believe that Charlie Kirk will never be forgotten, and we have to ensure that we never forget what took place. We failed after the assassination attempt on President Trump in Butler because we allowed it to go away and to disappear. We didn't insist on answers to the questions that we had regarding what happened to President Trump. Why is it that Crooks was found training and facilities associated with the intelligence community? Why did his cell phone data show that he was in close proximity with intelligence? Why was it that his apartment or his living area was professionally scrubbed? All things that totally disappeared. I mean, why is it that we officially know more about Tyler Robinson than we ever learned about Matthew Crooks? And so we can't make the same mistake that we made time and time again. That we've made time and time again throughout our history. We can't make the same mistake of allowing the JFKs to get assassinated without any accountability. The Bobby Kennedys, the MLKs, the assassination attempts on President Trump, the successful assassination of Charlie Kirk, which is, I think, the most politically profound assassination that this country, frankly, this planet has faced since the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We have to demand answers. And I know Kash Patel is coming out and he's saying that they're looking into everything like hand signals. They're looking into everything like perhaps the round coming from a different angle was the neck wound, an exit wound. I trust Alex Jones more than I trust anybody else just because I know who he is. I know what he's said over the years and I know how many times that he's been right. He's got absolutely no incentive to lie whatsoever. And people who accuse him of selling out don't understand that being sued for $1.2 billion isn't exactly what happens to somebody when they sell out. So I wholeheartedly trust Alex Jones when he comes out and he says, look, this is what the details are of the fragments of this round that were found in the body. There's no exit wound. Obviously, I've looked at the same footage that you've all looked at where his earpiece flies off and it seems like he was struck in the backside of his neck first and that maybe this was an exit wound. I understand we should look into all these things. We should investigate all of these things, but it's not really that hard to believe for me that a radical trans-dating leftist, presumably on SSRIs, I don't know for sure if he was on SSRIs or not, would do something like this, given all the death threats that even I'm 10% as effective, probably 1% as effective as Charlie Kirk. I mean, he was really a force to be reckoned with. But seeing all the death threats that I've gotten, the fact that I was swatted and Alex has been swatted and so many other people with InfoWars were swatted, and all the threats that we get in our email inbox or our DMs, I know that there are people out there that wanted to kill Charlie Kirk. I mean, there is no president that could ever be elected in the United States of America, again, as it stands, because or without the support of the infrastructure that Charlie Kirk set up. He is the reason that Donald Trump won every single swing state, because he understood that the Republican Party itself was not going to do the groundwork necessary in order to win the election for Donald Trump in 2024, because they failed to do it in 2020. And so he hired organizations like PHAs and Cliff Maloney, others who we've had on our network as guests, to do the door knocking in strategic counties and strategic zip codes to determine and ensure that low propensity voters likely to vote for Donald Trump would vote in droves, and they did. And it's all because of Charlie Kirk weaponizing the American people where the Republican Party failed to do so. And so he established for himself an organization, a system, which basically had veto power on any Republican presidential candidate into the future. If Charlie Kirk wasn't going to endorse and fully support any presidential candidate for Republicans into the future, that candidate was not going to win any elections. That is the truth. He became incredibly dangerous for the right-wing establishment. And I don't think the right-wing establishment killed him. I don't believe that Israel killed him, though I'm sure that they're delighted that he's dead, because it does seem like he was switching his perspective on that government. He always supported Israel, and I believe at his death he supported Israel, but I'm talking about the government of Israel. He seemed to be switching. And I don't think that Netanyahu had him killed. It's possible. If I see more evidence to show that, then I'll certainly believe it. It's not a difficult thing for me to believe, but based on the evidence, it seems the most likely thing that happened is that a radical trans sympathist took matters into his own hands and decided that he was going to assassinate Charlie Kirk so he could be a hero among his peers in Discord communities. He thought he was delighted, just like Luigi Mangione thought he was delighted or delightful. Going to a McDonald's after the assassination of the healthcare CEO. We see the same thing from this Tyler Robinson going to a Dairy Queen. I mean, who goes to get ice cream after they assassinate somebody like Charlie Kirk? That is unbelievably bizarre to me. Obviously, some serious mental illness going on here. And I believe that Tyler Robinson is responsible. We'll see what plays out. We'll see what comes out of these investigations. Not that I trust the FBI, not just because I don't trust Kash Patel, but it's an organization inherently untrustworthy. It's been spying on InfoWars since December 10th of 2013. Why is it that anybody should trust the FBI? I mean, between the FBI and the CIA, I think we have an example of the largest terrorist organizations in the history of terrorist organizations in the United States of America, 100%. But it's not hard for me to believe that some radical trans ideologue was responsible for this assassination. What we've seen from Israel is not the cause of the assassination of Charlie Kirk, but what we've seen from Israel is the hijacking of the narrative surrounding the assassination to try to make this look like some major anti-Semitic threat. They killed Charlie because he supported Israel. They try to hijack Charlie's name and brand for their own political narrative. I mean, everybody's trying to hijack it. The left's trying to hijack it so they can crack down on gun rights and increase gun regulations and gun reform. You see the Zionist hijacking and saying that this was an anti-Semitic assassination. Everybody is trying to claim the death of Charlie Kirk so they can make Charlie their own martyr. But the fact of the matter is, Charlie was a martyr for Christ and no one else and nothing else. He wasn't a martyr for InfoWars. He wasn't a martyr for MAGA. He wasn't a martyr for the right wing. He was a martyr for Jesus Christ. And his whole work was designed and centered around getting America to be more in line with the philosophy, theology, and divinity of Jesus Christ. Folks, we're going to have Kyle Serafin join us on the other side of this break. I'm anxious to hear what he thinks about everything. We're going to keep him for an hour if he's able to stay with us. And then we're going to take your calls for the last 30 minutes of the transmission. But before we go to break, please go to the alexjonesstore.com. It is the last chance tonight to get 50% off Ultimate Burn, Atomic Defense, MKUltra. Incredible for immune defense and immune support as we go into the fall season, the school season. Plus, you're keeping us on the air. And by the way, all orders, no matter how big or small, on the AlexJonesStore.com will get you a free Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, which is an incredibly hilarious meme. Great gift, great stocking stuffer. I know it's just a couple of months away before Christmas comes up. I can't even believe it. But please, go to the AlexJonesStore.com, not just because these products are absolutely incredible for you, not just because these deals are absolutely insane, but because by doing so, you keep us on the air broadcasting the truth against the all-out assault of evil on the truth. Stay with us.
Look, when you realize how fake it all is, the football, the basketball, the Lady Gaga, the Justin Bieber, who gives you these carbon tax messages, they tell your kids they gotta love Justin Bieber, and then Bieber says, hand in your guns, pass the Cybersecurity Act, and, the police state's good, and then your children are turning to mindless vassals who now they look up to some twit instead of looking up to Thomas Jefferson or looking up to Nikola Tesla or looking up to Magellan. I mean, kids, he circumnavigated with one ship the entire planet. He was killed by wild natives before they got back to Portugal, and when they got back, there was only like 11 people alive of the 200 and something crew, and the entire entire ship was rotting down to the waterline. That's destiny. That's will. That's striving. That's being a trailblazer and explorer. Going into space. Mathematics. Quantum mechanics. The secrets of the universe. It's all there. Life is fiery with its beauty. Its incredible detail. Today is the one-year anniversary of the AlexJonesRoe.com. Took 6 months to set it up, but we are launching Life is Fiery with its Beauty. That's a saying I said many years ago. One-year anniversary fundraiser sale. And we are doing really good in court. Big victories. You're going to see a bunch of stuff in the news very, very soon. I'll just leave it at that, involving the DOJ and what they've done to us. I'll stop right there. In celebration of the AlexJonesRoe.com officially becoming open for business for a year, we are launching the Life is Fiery with its Beauty one-year anniversary fundraiser sale. For this week only, all shirts and hats are just $25. They cost like $15 a piece. They're such high quality. Instead of the regular $35. Plus, we're giving everyone a free $11 to spend on the store this week only, with no code required on all orders above $75. Just at checkout, $11 comes off the price. And it doesn't stop there. All orders of Ultimate Burn are 50% off an amazing natural fat burning private label, the top seller. So, you know, it's already a top company. It totally works. Certified. 50% off to celebrate the fire of liberty burning within the heart of every info warrior. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com and take advantage of the incredible fundraiser sale now for incredible discounts on all of our merch, including the new Holy Wars line of Life is Fire with its Beauty. It's all based on the Crusades, which were a defense to over 100 Islamic attacks on Europe. If you don't go now, you won't be able to use the free $11 we are offering this week only, and you may miss out on the Ultimate Burn, which is about to sell out. Life is Fire with its Beauty one-year anniversary fundraiser sale details. All hats and shirts site-wide are just $25 and $35. Get a $11 to use anywhere on the site. No code needed for all orders above $75. Get an additional 50% off on all one-time orders of Ultimate Burn. And there's a bunch of other 50% off on Methylene Blue and so much more. Remember, every dollar you spend on AlexJonesRoe.com is a round in the heart, information-wise, peacefully, of the New World Order, satanic globalist cabal. Be the reason we will always be on the air while you still have a chance to save free speech, humanity itself. We've really gotten traction against the globalists. We're having major victories, but we've got to go over the top here. I am in state court today, federal court next week. We're deposing these people. I met with the Justice Department last week. Major stuff you will see within days on the quick side, within a week on the long side. You want action? You want? It's happening. We can only stay in the fight because of you. So I salute you all. You are the spirit of 1776. You are the answer to the 1984 tyranny. You are the resistance. The answer to 1984 is 1776. And I salute you all for your support, your word about your prayer. And I salute this crew, the best crew ever. They are so amazing. So keep them in the fight as well. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. Be the reason we always stay on the air.
If you want to shine like the sun, you've got to burn like it. You're listening to Tomorrow's News Tonight with your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Sunday Night Live. I am Chase Geyser, your host, joined by the esteemed Kyle Serafin. You've seen him many times over the course of the last several months on this network because of his incredible insights about what's going on with the FBI. Kyle, how are you this evening? Are you there with us?
I am indeed. How are you doing, Chase?
I'm doing well. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Obviously, rumors are still flying and circulating since the assassination of Charlie Kirk almost 2 weeks ago. And the memorial tonight was astounding and impressive in terms of turnout. Obviously, this is a major, for lack of a better expression, turning point for America and the West. We've seen a lot of international interest in this. I anticipate a lot of domestic interest in this, but the fact that so many all over the world are so interested in this, I think really just goes to show the scale of what happened to Charlie and what it means. Where is your head at right now in the context of everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks?
I'm a little sad about all of this. I mean, I was sad when it happened. I was sad watching it. I was sick to my stomach thinking about children growing up without their father. Took my kids to church this morning, and I was, you know, I'm in a space where my head is on a swivel at all times, and I'm looking out for people in faith communities in a way. Like I drive by every church now. I go to church in Central Texas and go by and notice that there's got to be a police car outside of every single congregation, that they're prominently, yeah, you know, stationed right up at the front of the parking lot. We watch armed officers, you know, walk through the service at mass and whatnot. And I'm looking over there and I'm thinking, you know, should I be carrying the same weapon system that they are? Should I be carrying the same sort of magazines if something were to happen? Which is not out of range for the kind of way that I think about things, but it's not a great attitude. And I don't feel like a sense of peace or excitement about this. I see a lot of people talking about, you know, I am Charlie Kirk. I see this online a lot, and I see a bunch of people that are acting with this new sort of fervor and zeal and excitement. And I've seen too many people say things like that and have it just disappear really quickly. That moments don't
stick. Yeah, I mean, obviously with something like this, you're going to have a lot of people hijack whatever happened for clicks or clout or attention.
Exactly.
Virtue signaling basically from the right, just as you see from the left anytime anything ever happens. But at the same time, I do, just from a strictly objective perspective, agree with the statement, I am Charlie Kirk. Obviously, what happened to Charlie is worse than anything that's ever happened to me. But it did feel to me like the attack on him was an attack on all of us who are just trying to make the country better. Does that align with what you think?
It's a very personal identification with someone that you may not have known, right? And so I think a lot of us see that. I also am very slow to join movements. I'm slow to join anything, actually. I don't own a MAGA hat. I'm not a Republican, you know, I'm more conservative than I think anything on the Republican side is. So it actually, you know, I try to actually live those values out. And I noticed some of the people that are out there speaking even kind of give me that uncomfortable, slimy vibe when I find out that, you know, they're talking about conservative values, but they don't live them. There's a lot of people inside the quote unquote movement that fall into that space. So for the broader people who take the message, this is going to be more for like the audience. Like if you're a regular person, which I consider myself to be a regular person, even though we're sitting here having this conversation, I hope that people take that I am Charlie Kirk moment and they take it as a challenge, because why was Charlie Kirk killed? Why was he the target that he was? Why not somebody else? Why not a politician who's not effective? Why not another figure who's polarizing? Because there are plenty. And I think the reason, and Nick Frieda said this the other day on his podcast, and he did a short that was very effective. He said the reason that he was killed is because he was effective. The thing that he did moved people's hearts and it moved their minds, and it did so in a very personal way. And his killing should be the same thing. It should motivate people to also be effective. So if you're claiming I want to be Charlie Kirk, or Charlie Kirk represents me, that the attack on him is also an attack that could have been on me, that means you have to live that out. So it actually should be more of a challenge. And I think it's not an easy challenge. Let me throw some ideas out there at you, Chase, because these are the questions people should ask themselves. What truth have I been running away from that I'm now going to speak and I'm not going to apologize for? What family member am I going to push back up against who says things that I know are false and I cannot abide by, but I've quietly just let it sit there? That I sort of cowardly sort of just kept the peace in the family by not saying something and pushing back respectfully, but firmly. What coworker have I tolerated saying bigoted things that I know are inappropriate and would not fly if the mirror was held up to them in the same way that it would be held up to you for being a conservative or for believing in things like constitutional liberties? Which one of those things are you now going to push back against? If you want to say, I am Charlie Kirk, and you want to live a hashtag, then, you know, don't make it like putting on the AIDS rim, and don't make it like putting up the black square in your profile and doing the BLM thing, but nothing changes. If you want to do that, there's a call to action. And so that, you know, if it's going to be truly be a turning point and not just a moment of celebration and not a moment where it burns out like a firework and then all you have left is kind of the husk that smells like cordite and fire and gunpowder, it has to actually be a decision to act differently. And a lot of people in this country, the reason why we're sitting and we are, I do think that the silent majority of this country, call it 75%, that sits somewhere in the middle, and that could be center left, it could be center right, and then people even on the right, as far as I am, you know, like I don't want to live around people, and I want to grow my own food and not have to go to a grocery store, and I don't want anyone to tell me what to do with my kids, and we homeschool them. Like that's how far I want to go. That's what I consider to be far right. Which, by the way, the New York Times called me far right the other day, which is kind of amusing. I know I'm doing something right if that's the case, right? But if you're going to be
talking about it, it's about your honor.
If you want to be in that bulk group, that's that that silent majority that exists in this country. They used to talk about it in the 90s when I was in high school. That was the idea that the silent majority was people who shared common values. I don't think you can be silent. It doesn't mean you have to be disrespectful. And I think Charlie Kirk's, you know, public discourse and his public ministry and life that he lived show us that. But it should be a real challenge to you. I listened to a sermon the other day where the main message was, is that it's not easy, you know, and I think actually Erica Kirk touched on this as well. It's not easy to be Christian. It is not meant to be easy. There's no promise there. Like this is going to be super fun and everyone's going to have a great time. No, I think the promise that the gospel put out was that, you're going to do the right thing. You will be persecuted for it on earth. And then there's a decent chance that you will be killed for it in a horrific way, which is sort of the experience of the apostles and martyrs throughout the ages. Right?
So I will say,
can we be white martyrs is the question. This is the last little piece of it. Red martyrdom is losing your life. This is something that I talked about early on when I first started speaking out and going and doing podcasts. Red martyrdom is that you have to sacrifice your life. Most people are not called to red martyrdom. That's not a concept that is all that popular. It's not, doesn't look fun. But being willing to do that, you have to also be willing to accept the lower version, which is called white martyrdom. And that means that you lose social standing, you lose friendships, you lose jobs, you lose positions where they might be comfortable. You might have to lose a house. You might have to lose, the place that you know. You know, you step out of a comfort zone and you accept consequences that are not favorable. So that's what white martyrdom is. And this was my big question. I saw some people on the left right now that are saying, you know, if you had seen 1933 Germany, would you do anything differently? And, you know, a lot of Americans should be speaking up because we're having a political rally where the president of the United States is speaking on behalf of a guy that they think was bigoted and hateful, right? And where were those people in September of 2021? It was only 4 years ago, and I remember losing my home over it. And I know a lot of people lost their jobs. They had OSHA mandates come down. They had governmental mandates. There were people in the military that lost their jobs over mandates that were completely irrational, that were faith-based for this sort of like leftist, you know, secular humanistic garbage with the COVID shots and other things. And so we had an entire institution, this governmental institutions, the law enforcement institutions, our medical establishment, and all these people, they all lost credibility with us because why? Because they wouldn't accept white martyrdom. They wouldn't actually lose their life in defense of liberty. They wouldn't even lose their job in defense of liberty. So I saw that as a moment when we could have turned and we didn't. And I'm hopeful, but I'm also kind of a little bit realistic that we won't have the impact that we should because we've had opportunities to do this over. Maybe in the light of seeing this moment where somebody's killed for speech, we could step up and do what's right as a nation and accept that the consequences are coming and that's okay because the odds are you probably won't lose your life over it. It might just be this, you know, uncomfortable.
Well, I'm pleased to hear you say, Kyle, that you're left in the position of thinking, you know, what do we do next? How do we become white martyrs or even red martyrs? God forbid that we have to. And I think that a lot of people, despite the plethora of people that we see virtue signaling, I think a lot of people are thinking what you're thinking, and perhaps for the first time. For me, I decided to kind of burn the ships after I saw what happened with January 6th. I wasn't there on January 6th, but as soon as I saw them calling it an insurrection and I saw the details of how it was weaponized and leveraged and used in the context of everything that we saw happen throughout the pandemic, that was a breaking point for me, and that's why I started getting vocal about what I believed and getting involved with InfoWars. And I did lose a lot of friends and a lot of family as a result of just being associated with Alex Jones. And it's a badge of honor to me. It's unfortunate because these were people that I loved, but I guess it's a good thing because I know that they weren't people that I really wanted in my life. I just had to find out this way. You know, when things are easy, it's a lot easier to maintain and keep friends. And then when things are hard, that's when you find out who your real friends are, as I'm sure you've experienced. But I was very pleased to see in the aftermath of Charlie's assassination that the right did seem to be weaponized in a way that we haven't seen in the past. In small, but I think significant examples of that are databases being created of 60 to 100,000 people that celebrated his death, the thousands of people that were fired as a result of doing this because we actually followed the accounts that were publishing this information and made phone calls and sent emails to these institutions. I mean, we did for the first time see the right do what the left has been doing for 10 years. And I do think that indicates a level of activation that is unprecedented in the right, for lack of a better term.
Let me throw a term out that you haven't heard. You've heard the term cancel culture, which is the pushback right now. The sort of the demonic instinct of the left was, can we make the cancellation of a $20 million a year, not that funny comic on par with the assassination of a man with a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old that just happened to, you know, a week prior to that. And so we saw a significant discussion. And if you follow any of the mainstream news media, which we have to do, and we do it on behalf of the listenership, so they don't have to do it. But I watched all the clips. I've seen all the segments that are being done, and there's defense on MSNBC and on CNN and ABC and so on. And everybody wants to make an excuse, and they wanted to make it about Jimmy Kimmel and his horrible loss and the First Amendment that they suddenly care about. The same people that celebrated Donald Trump being deplatformed from all the different social medias in the same, you know, few hours, right? So these people came forward. And they've likened it to cancel culture, but that's not what cancel culture was. For the most part, what we saw in cancel culture was that people dug up historical artifacts about your life and said that you can't continue in the life that you're in right now because previously, a year ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago, you said something that doesn't comport with the current vogue, whatever the ideology is that's acceptable right now. And so you're outside the window of what's acceptable retroactively because of what you did previously, right? Yes. Don't go dig up a 6-year-old tweet from you and say, now you're canceled because of something we just unearthed about you. I don't think that's what should be the way that anybody does business, but there is something called consequence culture, which we could really encourage. And I do think that that's something that Americans can understand. There are consequences for action, including if you just have a really bad television show and the ratings don't justify paying you $20 million a year anymore, then your company will look for a reason to do it. So we can still maintain, I think it's important to maintain principle, because that's really what this is all about. If you're going to, you know, right or wrong, or if people try to push you one way or another, if you say these are the principles, these are what they're grounded on, I've made the decision prior to the question coming up, then it's really easy to call balls and strikes because I already have where the strike zone is. You know, if you're trying to play it in real time, well, this is okay because it's my team and this is not okay because it's not my team, that doesn't play very well. So I don't have to cry about Jimmy Kimmel. I can lament the loss of a father and a husband in the same breath, and I can still be consistent. And I think that Charlie Kirk saying that there's no such thing as hate speech and there's no such thing as, you know, those protections are supposed to extend out to people to say everything. I think he would defend Jimmy Kimmel's right to speech, but he also probably wouldn't cry about a guy who had a lot of money getting paid millions of dollars a year, not being financially solvent for the actual, you know, business that was out there trying to run it. I think those are not the same thing. That's what we saw the left do. And on the right, what I see is people running around and they're looking for reasons.
It's obvious to me that ABC just used this as an excuse to fire Jimmy Kimmel because he was losing a lot of money for him. And there's probably a clause in his contract that if he says anything to harm the reputation of the network, they have the right to let him go. And so this was their opportunity to cut him loose instead of paying him whatever it was, $15 million a year for a show that has half the listeners of our stream right now on X. I mean, I think we're over 250,000 right now on X on this stream, which is twice the amount of viewers that Jimmy Kimmel had. So where's our $15 million, Kyle? But I think also the difference is,
well, just consider under the this. Cancel they call- culture. Yeah, they call it cover for action. So that, you know, cover for action means that it has to be plausible. This is an intelligence term, but it means that it's plausible that the thing was because he was being canceled about Charlie Kirk. That's the cover for action. But the reality of it is exactly what you just said. I think that it wasn't, you know, 100%. Financially solvent. Those can both be true.
100%. If he was making a lot of money for him, they would have made every excuse and they would have used it as an excuse to be, you know, pro free speech. But there's another difference too that not a lot of people are talking about. I'm sure some are, but not a lot of people are talking about the cancel culture of the left was hijacked and weaponized by at least the executive branch, if not other branches of the government. I mean, we saw in the Twitter files, the Facebook files, even just conversations between Joe Rogan and Mark Zuckerberg, for example, you have instances of the CIA or the White House directly calling these major social media platforms, asking them to remove specific accounts or specific content related to either vaccines or the Hunter Biden laptop. Nobody on the right is calling for the weaponization of the federal government to silence these people who are celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. It is literally the people just calling and complaining to these businesses, just as they would if they had a bad customer service experience using these businesses, to try to get these people ousted so that the culture in these institutions is no longer forgiving or perpetuating this level of just debauchery, for lack of a better term. I think that's a main difference too as well. We're not asking for the government to silence these people. We're just holding the businesses accountable for giving them a platform.
And to that point, the right, the people on the right, were pretty principled about pushing back. You even saw guys like Sang from the Young Turks saying, how about it? You know, Pam Bondi went out and stated that we're going to go after people for hate speech and you don't have a right to do that. And then people on the right were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yes, you do. That's the whole point, because who gets to decide what is or what is out of bounds when it comes to the words like hate speech? So,
right.
You know, that is the reminder, is to maintain principle. And still, you don't have to take any nonsense. You can still call up your local affiliate for fill in the blank. If you're one of those people who still watches television, which I'm not, call them up and say, hey, I don't like this kind of programming. I hope you guys would do something better. And when thousands of people do that, then you get places like Sinclair pushing back, which was the biggest ABC affiliate that said, hey, we're not going to run this guy's program. He's offended our listener group. We're in the business of attention spans equals money. We want people to watch the programs and then we sell advertisements. And if we can't do that because enough people are not paying attention, then you're not selling us a good product with ABC. And ABC is like, yeah, we heard you loud and clear. Again, cover for action, super easy. But again, the big piece is, I didn't like Donald Trump going out and talking about hate speech. I did think that was a misstep. I did think that Brendan Carr going out and using the FCC and at least even indicating that they were interested in pulling licensure and things like that. I think all those are terrible, because there's one rule we should always remember. You should never interrupt the enemy when they're making a mistake. And people who are saying evil and hateful things, especially things that are like against American values, like, yeah, you are an enemy. You're an enemy to normal people. Again, that 75%, let's say, of people that are in that sort of silent majority that's now starting to speak a little more, you have tremendous power. And then lastly, let's just also consider this. How many people are still doing the network television late night comedy routine show as part of their bedtime routine? Because I don't know a single person in my age bracket, and I'm in my 40s, I'm in my mid 40s. I don't know a single one of my friends is like, yeah, I got to turn on the late show with whatever it is, or I got to watch Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon, or I'm going to go watch Colbert. You know, forget the politics of it. I don't know anybody that their plan is, I'm going to go watch television live during that hour and I got to see it. I don't know anybody that does that anymore. So the even the taste.
Yeah, and that was something that almost everybody
changed.
Did 15 or 20 years ago. 15 or 20 years ago, that was a significant portion of the American people. Not true anymore.
Right. That was like water cooler talk that people would have. You know, when I was first stepping into the professional workforce out of college, I would see people having discussions about somebody said this. This was the comedy routine. We didn't have clips back then. We had our friend who would just like, you know, do their impression of fill in the blank routine, or you'd get a little bit of the monologue and you'd be like, oh, that's clever. Yeah, funny. Maybe I'll watch it next time. That doesn't happen anymore.
Well,
I don't know anybody that does that.
Stand-up comedians, it used to be huge if you were a stand-up comedian to get a Comedy Central special. Now nobody gives a shit.
That's right. No, they don't. They just moved on from it. They don't care whatsoever. I think the entire attitude has changed. The way that we consume media has dramatically changed. We're just not interested in being force-fed something and we're going to sit there and wait. And like even now, if you guys think about it, any of you who have like a non-subscription-based service, if you watch Amazon Prime, they started putting, you know, little clips in there where we have to see pharmaceutical commercials, or they want to try and sell us a Subaru or something. None of that is, you know, that's all going throwback. It's 20 years old and we're starting to see it back again. And there's an entire generation of people who grew up not even knowing about that. They grew up with Hulu on demand. They grew up with Netflix where it wasn't interrupted. They grew up with a video on the demand where they can sit and watch the entire series and they didn't have to wait till, you know, wait next week. I'm in the middle of watching a series right now where they're doing that, and I'm sort of frustrated. I'm like, damn, do I really have to wait a full week to catch the end of this episode? You're not going to just give it to me all up front. So we are seeing an attempt for, I think, maybe main networks to try to use something from 20 years ago. But at the end of the day, this is, you know, this is not cancellation in the same way. And I think the principles are really, really important. And I think if we're going to be talking about the way that people are dealing with this horribly sad event, if we're going to talk about an assassination, and we need to be really honest about the things that are there. There's multiple levels of it. There's the cultural level of it, where someone was attacked for speaking, which is an American principle. There's the, you know, the second piece of it where we look at it and we say there's a horrifically human experience where some father was taken away from his kids. I'm telling you, I cannot get away from that part of it. That's the part that hits me. I know you've got young kids too. I've got a 2-year-old right now, and I had a kind of a chaotic afternoon. I was going to jump on with Alex earlier, and then we started moving things around. He asked me to come on while Donald Trump was speaking, and I made the audacious decision to not interrupt the current president of the United States with my whatever commentary I might have done on top of it. And my reward was that my kid woke up from a nap, and then she pooped before we got to the toilet. So I spent like my hands covered in poop, you know, doing the dad thing when you got a 2-year-old. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. And I'm horrified that there's a man that's going to, he's not going to be able to do that. He's not going to be there. Like his 1-year-old son is not going to know him except from videos. And he's going to be surrounded with like multiple angles of his dad
being
killed.
That's the selfishness of the evil that was done too. Obviously, whoever was responsible for this did not care or think about his family whatsoever. I mean, there are people that I hate far more than whoever killed Charlie Kirk hated Charlie Kirk. And I do not want them violently killed. I just want rendered moot politically. You know, I want Joe Biden rendered moot politically. I don't want him assassinated. I want Hunter Biden irrelevant. I don't want him assassinated. And so the fact that these people would just go straight to violence, it's just a level of mental illness that's unprecedented, I think.
So there's this ongoing kind of discussion, you alluded to it early on too, and this is the third piece of it. So the cultural thing is loss over principle. There's the human aspect of it, and then the third thing is this movement to try to explain it. And we're in this moment where I've watched this, and I've watched this developing for the last couple of years now. But we've broken so much trust in institution, and I think it started maybe aggressively 10 or 15 years ago, but people really took notice of it during the COVID sort of nonsense where they actually watched the goalposts being moved in real time. Like they were sitting there and then they go, hey, here's this thing. Never mind. We're going to do something different. And you're like, 5 minutes ago, you said something. It's not even ancient history. It just happened to me. I still have the email in my inbox of you telling me the different policies. And we watched all that happen. And so we've watched this completely diluted version of institutional credibility. It's all gone. And that's law enforcement, and that's media, and that is politicians, and all these groups, right? They all don't have the same credibility they do. So when someone comes out from a U.S. attorney's office or someone come out from a DA's office and says, this is the guy, we've got him, this is what we know, we're going to give you a briefing on it, people go, we don't think so. And so people had two choices, I think, at that fork in the road. One choice was to be a skeptic and say, show me the evidence, like I heard you say earlier. Show me the evidence, and I'm willing to open my mind up to whatever, you know, that may be. And then the other group of people said, I don't believe anything you say, so whatever I think is good. And there's a whole bunch of people out there that are in that second category of, I'm just going to believe whatever I want, despite the fact that maybe the Occam's razor cuts really straight line. And, you know, to the point of the discussion about who this guy was and the belief that this, you know, the shooter that they haven't, that they've alleged and that they've charged, Tyler James Robinson, if he did have that sort of ideology of transgenderism and he was interested in some of this stuff, there is no more navel-gazing group of people in the entire United States than folks that are so interested in their sexuality, that are so interested in the way that you perceive their sexuality, that they have to tell you about it nonstop, that it is the fundamental part of their identity. Yeah, I could see getting lost up in that and seeing those people not have any idea that they didn't actually hate a father nearly as much as you and I probably dislike certain people, and we still wouldn't wish death upon them. So that, I think,
100%.
That's worth kind of talking about maybe on the other side of the hour here. What has actually been charged, what people actually have believed, and maybe we can debunk some of this stuff, and maybe we can at least open some minds up to, just because the narrative is out there and it's official, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily wrong and we should wait for more evidence on it. And there's a lot of stuff that I keep seeing in the public sphere that people have said, well, this didn't happen. It's like, well, it actually is in black and white in the charging document if you guys took a few minutes to read it.
Sure. All right, folks, you heard them. We're going to talk more about this and unpack the details of the assassination of Charlie Kirk on the other side of this break. Stay with us. Make sure in the meantime you go to thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason we can always be on the air.
This is a little piece of art, a really nice memento, and when you order for $100 an InfoWars War Bond, it gets mailed to you with a one-time promo code you use. So when I show these on air, whoever puts one of these in first gets $110. But when it comes in the mail, you can use it once for $110 in the store, and then it's a nice memento to know that you supported the operation in such a key, critical time. Alex Jones War Bond, $110. Redeem your $110 War Bond right now. Just enter the gift code below at checkout, and it will then pay for your purchase, and then you get to keep the War Bond to hang on the wall, a nice little memento. Get your Alex Jones War Bonds right now, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, so $770 right here for whoever watching live puts in one of these codes first, you get $110 to spend in the store. But for everybody else, they also make great gifts. You can also watch the show at thealexjonesstore.com. There's a listen live area right there with the streams, thealexjonesstore.com. And even if the globalists are successful at shutting down InfoWars, which they're not going to be, I believe, in a celebration of the Alex Jones Store officially being open for business for 1 year, We're launching the Light Was Fire with Its Beauty 1 year anniversary fundraiser sale. For this week only, all shirts and hats are just $25, not $35. Plus, we're giving everyone a free $11 to spend on the store this week at checkout. And it doesn't stop there. All orders of Ultimate Burn, an incredible natural weight loss formula, are 50% off to celebrate the fire of liberty burning within the heart of every info warrior. Be the reason, as Chase Geiser says, we will always be on the air. And I humbly and respectfully thank you for all of your support.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Sunday Night Live. I am Chase Geiser, your host this evening, joined by the esteemed Kyle Serafin. We were just getting into some of the details of the assassination and the response to it. Obviously, the conspiracy theories have run wild since the assassination took place just a couple of weeks ago, which is to be expected with any assassination of this nature, basically forever into the future. There's all the next one that happens, whatever it is, God forbid it even happens, but the next one that happens, there's going to be conspiracies around it. It's going to be immediately people looking at different angles, different sound, different audio files, different connections of who the security guy was and who he went to college with and who was his roommate and how he's connected to Netanyahu. I don't know, whatever. It's always going to happen, but obviously we're in a situation where there is a total lack of trust in the establishment institutions, FBI, CIA, you name it. And because of that lack of trust, they've gotten themselves into a position where when they do tell the truth, there's going to be a significant portion of people that just don't believe it. So do you think that's what's happening here in this instance?
In a big way. And so this actually ties into what we talked about in the last hour, and it's worth knowing. This on-demand culture that we have, this belief that I should be able to get the entire, you know, terminal list, Dark Wolf right up front, and I shouldn't have to wait for weekly installments the way that, you know, I used to go watch the X-Files, and I'd go watch it every Friday, and that's what we did. You had to wait till the Friday. You didn't get to go watch the entire season right up front. But we have this attitude now, and there's an entire generation that has been, you know, they don't know anything different. But for those of us that do know something different, we've still been acclimated towards just expecting to get everything we want. Like, we should be able to go to our phone right now and type something in, you know, who was the president on this day and who was their spouse and, you know, what was their religious persuasion and what was their chiropractor's name? And you should be able to type that into AI and it'll spit it out. And like a lot of times it will. A lot of this stuff comes out almost instantaneously. Yeah. I remember when Google was new, and I recall when search engines were novel and they were exciting, and we used to call it the Oracle, and it wasn't in your phone, right? It was on the computer terminal. So we would go to the Oracle and we would ask a question and we would get whatever the heck, you know, mediocre search results were out there when there were, you know, thousands and thousands of web pages and not tens of millions or hundreds of millions or billions of them. And so this, you know, give it to me right now. This instant gratification culture has a lot to do with what people are struggling with too. It's compounded by the fact that we don't trust institutions. And when they come give us information, we're like, well, we don't believe you anyway. But they also expect to get all the facts right up front. And unfortunately, that's not the way that our system is designed. Our system is designed to actually conceal a lot of stuff. Think about going back, I don't know, 15 years ago. You don't have to be crazy. You just go back a little bit of time. Anybody who's older than about, let's say, 35 years old can remember that when something bad happened, you didn't get all the details on it. And it wasn't necessarily because they were trying to keep it from you, because they were trying to be nefarious. And like, granted, the FBI, where I used to work, they are 100% interested in keeping things that's intelligence related because they don't want to share it with you. But there's another really big point to it. You're not supposed to taint the jury pool. You're not supposed to lay all the facts out there. Yes, it has to be shared in discovery. There are certain things that are going to make it into a probable cause statement. There are certain things that would be put out in front of a grand jury that you might have to, you know, get that is the enough information for people to look at it and go, yes, the likelihood of this happening is higher than not. And therefore, we're going to issue arrest warrants. And therefore, we're going to proceed down this sort of charging document. There's going to be an indictment or so on. They might do it in a form of a complaint. But at the end of the day, there has to be a lot held back for the fairness of the process. And if you believe in due process, and nominally, I think people that are conservative and that are in this country that want it to continue, we have to believe that. Like, it's built into our Bill of Rights. There are things that are formulaic that you don't get to release it all to the public because then it would taint the way that people think about it. If you made your case in the court of public appeal instead of doing it in a court of law, you can actually get that case thrown out. And there's some reasons why you don't want some of the people that are out there even talking right now. I think they're doing a grave disservice to the potential prosecution of the alleged shooter. So we can, you know, talk about it after the break, but I think we should go through what is the probable cause statement, what's been alleged, and what information actually is available that they have put out, and then see if it cuts out some of those conspiracies for people who want to go out there and do it. I've also got a pretty good piece from the Daily Mail that I sent over, and Cash Patel's even talking about looking into the conspiracy theories. I'm going to try to dissuade people from it in general and just tell you why these are a bad idea. And honestly, Cash Patel shouldn't be involved at all. I don't think he should be talking, and I can explain to you a little bit more about that shortly.
Absolutely. And look, obviously, I'm someone who is not averse to conspiracy theories. I work at InfoWars. I think so much of what's happened throughout history, from the fall of man and the story of the Garden of Eden to the assassination of Julius Caesar to 9/11, I think there's so much conspiracy involved in our history. But this time, this seems to line up. We'll talk more about it on the other side.
Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it, and he's skeptical. But I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
While other shows lie to you about what's happening now, tomorrow's News Tonight tells you the truth about what's happening next with your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Sunday Night Live. I am Chase Geyser, joined by the esteemed Kyle Serafin. We were just touching on what we wanted to get into for our 22 minutes and 28 seconds left together. Let's dive right into the Daily Mail article, Kyle, and see what you think.
All right, so I'm going to read the title for folks who are just kind of listening in the background here. Maybe they got the phone closed. It says the FBI says 3 Charlie Kirk conspiracy theories involving text messages and hand signals and a second shooter could be true. That's actually not what they say, but that makes good for a headline. So we'll kind of dig into this. Cash Patel went out and spoke about the things that they're going to look into. First of all, let me make the point to folks. Having an FBI director that, you know, that says he's got a personal kinship and friendship with the deceased, with the victim in this case, saying anything is very problematic. Anybody who's worked in law enforcement, I put a poll out there on X and let people weigh in on it. And I got dozens and dozens and dozens of people, retired and current and active duty law enforcement, saying the same thing. If there is the possibility of impropriety, they do not allow you to investigate. If it's your neighbor at a car accident, you pull up, you're going to have to basically hold the scene until someone comes up and does it. And then it's not even if there is the possibility of it. It's the appearance from the outside that there could be impropriety. You don't ever allow people to do it. It's referred to as conflict of interest. Every department I've ever heard of, they will move you and they will recuse you, or you're supposed to recuse yourself the minute you identify it right away. This is common practice, which means that Cash Patel and Dan Bongino should have never been involved in this in any way. They shouldn't have gone out there and in a professional capacity. They should have said, hey, we're handing over the reins to our number 3. He's authorized to give whatever material support the FBI has to go and help out local law enforcement. We're here in a supportive role, and we are hereby recusing ourselves. We're not going to be speaking about it publicly. That would have been the right move. Anything after that, I think, was a mistake. But he's out there talking about it, so let's kind of dig in. He said that agents may be examining peculiar hand gestures. Now, this was one of the conspiracies. You want to sum up that conspiracy, because you probably have a better handle on it than I do. I just kind of turn that stuff off when I hear hand signals in the crowd.
There's people in the background, and they're moving around, and you know, people are trying to interpret it as military hand signals of sniper or whatever, and it's not obvious that that's actually what's going on. It could just be people adjusting their sleeves or tipping their hat or grabbing their ear. I mean, things that people do when they're standing for an extended period of time in a hot day in front of people, they move around, they fidget. It's uncomfortable to do that. Or they could have been doing hand signals to talk about different people in the crowd that they were looking at. I don't know. But to me, it wasn't just immediately incriminating because somebody tipped their hat and then grabbed their ear.
Right. Now, just like we were talking about a few minutes ago, there is a group of people who have said whatever I believe is good enough and I don't need any evidence. So I'm just going to look at something and make a decision and then I'm going to defend it to, the, you know, very aggressively. So they did. The thing is that there are ways to disprove some of the stuff. And some of it is if those people come forward and speak. Now, it turns out some of the folks that people had identified was a guy who was wearing a white T-shirt, which was the same as Charlie Kirk's. He's wearing a white ball cap and his name is Frank Turek and he does a podcast. And apparently he is very, very close to the Kirk family. He referred to Charlie Kirk as like his fourth son and
yes.
He was there on scene. And so we've got a little clip from his podcast, which is called Cross Examined, where he did probably one of the most difficult things to do, talk about losing someone that you care deeply about. And he addressed this because he was criticized that maybe he was one of the guys that was involved in the shooting, which I think is, you know, probably a surreal world to wake up in and find out that people are making that accusation. If you guys want to run that clip, it'll give you a little bit of backstory on who this guy was. And maybe we can dispel at least that little piece of it in this particular individual.
I'm so enthusiastic to see Charlie. So Charlie starts flipping these hats. You know, he's got the Make America Great Again hats, the 47 hats. And so I'm just kind of standing there and someone on staff just hands me a row of hats. So I go, I guess I get to flip them too. So I'm flipping them all over the place. And people are just excited. They're chanting USA, USA. I mean, they just love Charlie. So I start FaceTiming my wife. I'm saying, look at this. This is incredible. Then I start FaceTiming my son and my daughter-in-law while Charlie sits down and begins to ask questions. Now, this is where you may have seen an internet conspiracy. The man in the white hat was giving signals to the shooter. Yeah, the man in the white hat was me, okay? I did this with my hat. Maybe I touched my nose or something while I'm holding my phone because I'm FaceTiming my son and daughter-in-law. And they're huge Charlie fans. So I'm maybe 30 feet from Charlie. I'm right off his right elbow. I'm standing probably just off camera if the camera's going forward on him. Maybe about his 3:30 or 4 o'clock. And I'm just filming away. And by the way, to show you how stupid this is, they thought Dan, his main security guy, was giving signals too. Signals for what? You don't need signals. There's a sniper up there. He doesn't need anyone to signal anything. He can look through his scope and see what's going on. What do you think? He's looking through his scope and going, what's the signal? What am I? It's crazy that people actually believe this stuff. But, you know, if it's on the internet, it must be true, right? Don't believe in these crazy conspiracy theories. You need evidence. It's ridiculous. I didn't even know about it for probably 36 hours after the murder or 30 hours after the murder. We were in a bubble. We were just paying attention to the family. We were just paying attention to the friends. Didn't go on the internet much. When I finally meet my wife back in Phoenix, she goes, there are millions of people who think you were in conspiracy to kill Charlie. I'm like, what? That's crazy. So thanks to my friends, Elisa Childers and Seth Dillon and others, they tried to clear the air on that. You still have people saying, oh, yeah, we need to check into this guy and this other guy, too, the security guy. It's ridiculous.
Probably so good the right first there. Question, So
yeah.
That's the guy,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
go ahead.
Simple story. That was his team. The people that were closest to him were on his team. They've known him for years. They're close with the family. He also goes on in that podcast and said a couple other things I thought were really relevant. I didn't know because we'd gotten some weird reporting on whether or not the children were in the crowd, whether, you know, Charlie Kirk's wife was in the crowd at that time and that maybe one of the babies had tried to run to him. So that was debunked in this podcast as well. So the information's out there. You got to go find it. I mean, it's not necessarily running to find you per se, but that's useful information to me. Apparently they went and got a plane and they had Erica Kirk and the family loaded up to fly out. So, you know, she was not there is what I took that to mean. And so, you know, that helps kind of put some stuff together. So a lot of these
well, and then there's the very bizarre text exchange too between the shooter and his alleged significant other. A lot of people look at that and they say, oh, this looks like boomers, you know, who wrote it, you know, investigators that wrote it to, you know, make it seem obvious or put all the evidence out there. It seemed to me like it was something that the shooter sent to a significant other to try to reduce the incriminating impact on who the significant other. It seemed to me like if we were conspiring together to shoot somebody and I did it, I'd be like, I know you don't know anything about this, but I just have to tell you that it was all me and I've been working on it all. But, you know, like stupid people or naive or mentally ill people might have an exchange like that. It doesn't necessarily mean that the FBI just forged or made up the interaction. It seemed to me very likely that that was a pre-planned interaction that they were going to have to try to make sure that the significant other wasn't held accountable.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're talking about in this article as well. And I 100% agree with you that the stilted sort of exchange, it's more likely that it is attempting to recuse somebody or you know, sort of take them out of that sort of criminal accomplice space. And even yes. Like accomplice after the fact, we're trying to go out there and do cover. And badly because it's stilted and awkward because that's not how people talk. And we're trying to get fat. Like when you have a dedicated number of facts that you need to work into a conversation, if you're not really trained at that, and if you're, especially if you're operating under duress, you can imagine how weird it would be. And this is exactly what we're talking about there. We've got people that's the most yes. likely action. Now, maybe they actually did that spontaneously. For all I know, maybe they're just weirdos because there are weirdos out there. We have friends that are weirdos. We have friends that text us strange things and they come out. The odds
yeah,
are
they're weird in a different way though.
If it's going to be made up at all, the odds are is more likely that it's going to go after trying to keep somebody out of the purview of justice. So that's I tend to agree with you on that. And they actually have the text exchange in the charging document. Now, what's really wild is people took screenshots of that charging document, which is 10 pages long. People can go find it if you want to go search for it. It's the indictment. The wild part for me is that people took a screenshot. This is very common in indictments and in criminal complaints that you paraphrase things. Like I've done things where I've done a transcript of a phone call. So it'll be there in quotes and I'll have transcribed it properly. And then people will be like, well, that's not even the original thing. Like you just typed up what they said. It's like, that's what a written document is, man. Like we can't give you the actual text messages. And in the same way, they said the timestamps are not in it. So it's fake. Well, no, it was recreated, but it was recreated for a charging document, which does have a burden of proof that goes along with it. They can't make things up in that per se. They can only give facts that they can actually substantiate and corroborate. Now, you're not going to get the police file behind it or you're not going to get the screenshots or whatever else, but that doesn't mean that it's faked. So again, that's that institutional distrust. Once you've ruined credibility, which we've done, I mean, 100% that's been done. Then you know that you're in a space where we're going to start seeing people, they're seeing one thing. And there was this movie called Lucky Number 11. Do you ever remember watching that Bruce Willis flick?
Yeah, a long time ago.
So the concept in there that he talks about is this: the whole movie is a Kansas City shuffle, and the Kansas City shuffle is a con job, right? The con job is that you know that there's something that is going on where someone is trying to deceive you. The Kansas City shuffle is that the deception is not the deception that you perceived. So you think that you're being conned and you think you know what the con is and therefore you can react to it appropriately. And the whole point is that they're conning you in a different way. A lot of people think they're living in a Kansas City shuffle when it's basically like, no, this is just how it works. But if you've never done law enforcement, if you've never read an indictment and today's your first day because you just decided that now you really care about this, and I can understand why people would suddenly be motivated to start looking into legal process, you're coming to it with no background, and so you don't know that this is very common and normal. So I wanted to read a couple of things out of this charging statement, if that's good with you, because I think it actually debunks some of the other conspiratorial questions that I keep seeing out there. It doesn't mean that this is, you know, 100% correct, and it doesn't mean that we're not being lied to. I'm just saying that the probability is that it's probably closer to the reality simply because it's the thing that goes directly from one point to the other. There's a logical following here that it doesn't have all the logical leaps that I keep hearing people on the internet or people that even are my own friends, and they go, what about this? And I'm like, that question has been asked and answered. They actually had to answer it in order to get this indictment out. So part one is that the counts that are being charged, and like I said, 10-page document, it was put out by a guy named Jeffrey Gray, who's the Utah County Attorney in Utah, in the county where this is being charged. So these are local charges, not federal, but aggravated murder was the first one. And they added some victim targeting enhancements because it was specifically because of who he was and his political expressions. So that actually almost is closer to like a hate speech enhancement, right? Or like a hate enhancement. A little bit of that. There's another piece on there that the violent offense was committed in the presence of a child. So that's another aggravating factor that they've added to it. Worth knowing, the additional counts are all less serious than the aggravated murder, as you can imagine, which is a capital crime. So you've got felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily injury. Again, with the various different enhancements, an obstruction of justice. This was the attempt to remove evidence and to pull some of this stuff away. So that actually does explain why some of the things were not where you might have seen them. He didn't fire a weapon, leave it on the scene, and then, you know, turn himself in. The fact that he was trying to you know, obstruct justice in some way, shape or form, or try to conceal the crime, that all plays into it. You've got another one, tampering with a witness, which is the reaching out and speaking to people that were involved, potentially the roommate, potentially other people in the Discord channel and stuff like that. If you're trying to tamper with a witness and have their testimony change, then you can be charged with that. So they hit that. There's a couple different counts of witness tampering that are in there. And then it goes on a little bit less. Another one is just committing a violent offense in the presence of a child. So those are the seven counts that are actually charged. And it's worth running through the fact pattern. And they don't say things that are particularly crazy. First of all, people have said, how do we know it's a 30-06? I've heard that out there. It's like, that didn't come from anywhere. It came from this charging document. In fact, one of my buddies actually just said that to me earlier today. This thing says on September the 10th, 2025, approximately 12:23, Charlie Kirk was shot and killed while speaking to a large crowd on the campus of Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah, counts 1 and 2. So they actually tell you what they're substantiating in the fact pattern there. The police found a suspected murder weapon, which is a bolt action 30-06 rifle nearby. We see the pictures of it. We've talked about it on this program as well, and I've talked about it with Alex Jones. It appears to be a Mauser 98, which is something we've also heard from people speaking in press conferences, not listed in this particular charging document, however. Then it says over the next approximately 33 hours, they conducted a manhunt, blah, blah, blah. They end up getting Tyler James Robinson to surrender to police in Washington County in the sheriff's office. DNA consistent with him, with this man, was found on the rifle's trigger. So they obviously swabbed it. That sounded like what the FBI director said, where they were flying evidence back and forth and rushing on there and had positive hits on DNA. So that kind of lines with what we've been told publicly. Again, does it line up? Is it completely illogical? So far, nothing completely illogical to me. They said after the shooting that he hit the gun, which is count 3. That's the obstruction and trying to move evidence. Discarded the clothing that he wore when he filed the rifle. That was count 4, another obstruction charge, and told his lover slash roommate to delete incriminating text messages, which was count 5, and not talk to the police, which is count 6, the witness tampering. And then there were children present at the time of the shooting, count 7. So that's how they explained what they did and why they charged the counts that they did in kind of a broad overview. And then they go into the fact pattern, what it is. And some of this stuff is actually really helpful for folks that don't think that there was a rifle involved. I had people say, how did he get on the roof? Do you know how he got on the roof?
I don't know how he got on the roof, but I don't find it hard to believe.
Right? It seems like it would be. So the question is what, you know, did he climb up a ladder? Did he find some sort of like a trap door? Apparently the roof was accessible by a public walkway and all you had to do is jump underneath a railing and drop down a couple of feet. And from the reading this particular fact pattern in the indictment, it sounds like they were able to capture that on video. So we haven't seen all of the evidence out there.
What a lot of people will say though, Kyle, what a lot of people will say is just because it's in this document doesn't make it true. The document could be faked. And that's true. 100%. This type of stuff could be totally faked. But then the question becomes, all right, well, what's more likely then? Like, do you have a more likely explanation as to what happened? Is there just indisputable evidence from the video or whatever that points to anything else? And honestly, the closest I've come to doubting the official narrative is some of the video analysis that I've seen that makes it seem as if the round came in through Charlie's kind of right ear area and out through his neck. I don't know anything about ballistics or guns, Kyle. And so as a layman, when I watch something like that, I'm convinced. I see the earpiece fly out of his ear and it's like, oh, it makes sense that he would have jolted and then the wire for the earpiece could have been under his shirt and caused it to ruffle like that and that this was an exit wound. That's just what I hear from people. I don't know anything about ballistics. What are your thoughts on some of the claims that this is an exit wound out of his neck versus just a direct hit in the neck from that higher angle that the Tyler Robinson was allegedly positioned at?
Yeah. So one of the questions that comes along with that too is whether, you know, what happened? Where's the medical examiner report, which we're not entitled to, by the way, we're just not entitled to it. That's something that's going to show up at trial. I'm sure they will go out there and explain where these things are. So what we've gotten are Turning Point USA spokespeople coming out and saying, I spoke with the surgeon and here's what he said. So that's hearsay. And it feels to me like there's a narrative on there. I saw the back and forth with Alex Jones, maybe yesterday. And all that was really weird to me, the magic bullet and it stopped under the skin and his neck stopped. You know, we keep hearing that he was shot in the neck and I don't know how broadly the word neck actually involves, like whether it means just below like sort of the sternal notch here and whether it means, you know, hitting in this sort of suprasternal area. If that is considered neck, then that looks very plausible. That's what I saw on the videos that were slowed down. And I watched them over and over again until a point where I felt sick to my stomach just watching it because it's, you know, there's a human aspect to it as well, but the mechanics of it look really simple. I saw the earpiece fly off. I saw all these reasons that people were saying it, but if you get hit with a high velocity rifle round in the chest or in the upper chest and, you know, it's part of your neck and it hits bone, then it's anybody's bet what's going to happen next. What looks like most likely to me, and again, it's against what the surgeon guy said, but the surgeon is coming in through hearsay. It looked like he got hit probably somewhere here, center of mass, below the chin and above, you know, above the sternum. There's a spinal cord back there, which also goes along with what we heard, Frank, Turek say in that podcast that we just had on a second ago, where he said, you know, Charlie's was, his lights were out when he was in the SUV. When we carried him off, he was fixed, what they call fixed, gaze, which means he was no longer focusing and that he had basically stopped processing visual information. He assumed that he was probably dead right then. They got his heart working again in the hospital, we're told. And that's what Frank says in the podcast, but it doesn't mean that it was something that the wound was commensurate with survival. You know, you could be brain dead right then and still have a beating heart if people do CPR properly. So that made a lot of sense to me. It looked like an exit wound in the neck. I agree. That actually is what an exit wound would look like. But, bullets slow down when they hit dense bone. They can slow down when they hit muscle. It, you know, 30-06 is a powerful round. People kill elk with it all the time. They shoot moose with it. You could take down a deer. I've seen deers flip when they hit the spine and they literally go back. What we saw Charlie Kirk do was fall backwards and he went back several inches. Then he made impact with a chair. And so when that happens, if you had earpieces on and you made impact with a chair while you're moving backwards, the earpiece might continue backward onward. So that explains it at least enough for me to say this is as plausible as not. And I don't know why they would have to lie about it. They being whoever they is. That's the biggest piece for me. When people were doing the whole thing about Butler, PA, which we all got to see that and everybody says, well, there was a second shooter and this and this and that. And my answer was Donald Trump walked away from that alive. So if you add that there's a second shooter, that means two people failed at whatever that mission was. And that becomes even less probable to me. I don't know why you need a second shooter. And in this case, I don't know why you need a second shooter. It was successful. You know, I think it's just as plausible that the conspiracy part of it, which they talked about in the Daily Mail article, is that people were conspiring on ideas. They were crowdsourcing. What's the best way to go in there? Do you need to walk with a limp to pretend? Because you could do a gait fake. Do you need to do a costume change or do you need an outfit change or whatever you want to call it? Is that the tactic to be able to make yourself more elusive? It worked for 33 hours. I mean, he was in the wind. He got turned in. He might have been caught at some point in time, but we know for a fact that he got away from the scene, which means he had a successful egress. Did people kind of help him with those ideas? Those
and
are
the arguments that the dad
ideas.
Would turn in his own son. It becomes a real stretch when you talk about a father turning in his own son. If he's just a patsy, it just becomes more and more complicated the more and more you lean into the conspiracy arguments so far. And like I said, man, I am somebody who is totally inclined to accept conspiracy theories, but I want to see evidence. And I understand that there's all this argument about Israel and how they might have been involved because he switches narrative. Maybe Israel is feeling like it's benefiting from his death because Turning Point USA could have turned to an anti-Israel stance in a year or two. I don't know if that's true. Maybe they are kind of like the dancing Israelis just celebrating the whole thing. But it seems to me that the Israeli conspiracy is more the way that they're trying to hijack the narrative post facto than it was a conspiracy to make it happen ahead of time. You know what I mean? And I'm not trying to be obtuse or ignorant here. I'm not somebody who's particularly friendly to the government of Israel. I've been very, very critical of Israel. I was very critical of Charlie before he died because of his support for Israel. I mean, brazenly so, to the point where I'm almost embarrassed at some of the things I said about him, because if I'd known he was going to be assassinated, I never would have, you know, called him a faggot or anything like I did, you know, just 4 weeks ago. But that being said, like, I don't see any evidence here that Netanyahu planned this assassination. I see evidence of him trying to hijack it and turn Charlie into a martyr for Israel. And that's, you know, morally corrupt and disgusting to me. But one question I have for you, and we might not have enough time for you to answer it on this side. Hopefully you can stay with us just for the next 20 minutes. I'm sorry to always keep you. I know you want to be with your family, is why is it that we know so much more about Tyler Robinson than we know about Matthew Thomas Crooks?
That's a great question. And I think that has something to do with the fact that they're trying to change this image of this institution. The only way you're going to do it is by opening the books up in some ways and getting it back to real work. I think that's a part of it. So I think the Trump administration has tried to open up and be more transparent. I don't think that this was the right way to do it per se. I think, you know, information about the guy is fine. This should have come from local law enforcement because they're going to prosecute this case, and what they want in the open should be the deciding factor. It shouldn't be Cash Patel going out there and doing an ego check and trying to break news on X. I think all of that is just really bad just because of the conflict of interest you've got there. And it may actually affect the prosecution. So we'll see. I hope it doesn't. And you know, maybe this guy will plead out. A lot of people do that as well. But I do think the FBI understands that they have a credibility crisis. So they have this desperate need to try to share information. The problem is, you know, I haven't seen federal charges filed yet. I don't know if I missed it. I'll have to keep looking. But if this is local charges only, and those are the only ones that I see that he's being held on, then the locals should be quarterbacking this 100%. And they should only release what they think is relevant to appease the public that they have to, because they've obviously got political pressure on that too, but they should also be most concerned about maintaining the, you know, the capabilities of doing a solid prosecution and bringing the case the way that it is meant to be done and not have it thrown out over some technicality because you've exposed the, you know, and poisoned the well of potential jurors. And that's a real concern. So, you know, I think that they're walking a tightrope. They're desperately trying to figure out how do we appease this, you know, no delayed gratification country, and at the same time also make sure we get a solid conviction here.
Stay with us. More on the other side.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene blue tube. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in
because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshore.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it, yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed, it's not caffeine, it's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexjonesshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it from SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time the end of the show. By the time I got, like, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Tip of the spear to the edge of tomorrow. It's Tomorrow's News Tonight with your host, Chase Geiser.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Chase Geyser back with the esteemed Kyle Serafin. Kyle, I asked you right at the end of the last segment why you think it is that we know more about Tyler Robinson than Thomas Crooks. Why is that specifically? I mean, do you think that we should still be using this instance of Charlie's assassination as leverage or propellant to get us back into looking into what really happened in Butler with Trump? Because just as a layman, as an American, I am frustrated in retrospect at how easily we dismissed what happened to Trump. I think by virtue of the fact that he survived and how we just so easily let it go. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't hate what you're talking about there. To be fair, he has no right to privacy at this point. There's no ongoing criminal prosecution, so it doesn't matter what you reveal about him. You're not going to upset any legal case. I think everything that they know about him should be put out there, if nothing else, just to help people understand what the threat was, how close it came. I think people had an instinct on it. You know, I said at that, on that day July the 13th of last year that we sort of like watched a pane of glass in maybe a double pane window break, and that whatever the darkness is that's sitting outside of that cabin that we live in, it got real close. And, I think on September the 10th, that second pane was broken. I think the crazy thing is that people who see a successful assassination attempt, you know, you and I see something horrible. We see a father taken away from his children. We see a man who was a leader who was speaking things that he believed in, he was passionate about, and he was willing to go to the mat for, and that he was willing to bring dialogue to people who disagreed with him. And so all of that stuff is, you know, that's a horrifically sad moment. And other people see this as like, well, there's a success. You can get tons of notoriety and you can pull it off. Nobody's looking for a 150-yard, 200-yard shot out there. They didn't have drone coverage that was flying over the top of that crowd. They didn't even have an ambulance on scene. And maybe that's a testament and a testimony to the type of person that Charlie was and his faith in humanity. I tend to be a little bit, you know, I don't even like going in places where there's crowds.
We've reached a threshold.
A gathering of people. So, yeah, I think some people are looking at it and they're going to go, okay, they're going to step it up.
We reached a threshold where it's obvious that individual influencers are more powerful and impactful than politicians. So we traditionally, as Americans, have this mindset that Congress and the Senate, they need protections. The president and candidates need protections. And that's all true. But now with somebody like Charlie Kirk, whose infrastructure through TPS USA was so critical in winning the swing states in terms of groundwork and the strategies that they were doing. And we get into the intricacies of that on a whole other day and spend an hour talking about that. But he was absolutely instrumental. And it just goes to show how as individuals, if we work hard and dedicate our lives to something like political justice or cultural change in this country, we can actually garner more influence and more power than, say, a congressman.
And listen, the security posture is always a little bit behind the threat. That's what the nature of evolving threats is always like. That's what theoretically you want to see your intelligence agencies looking for. It's what I don't want to see our law enforcement agencies doing, unfortunately, because then they end up doing things called pre-crime. But people were asking in the wake of it. It's like, well, how come they hadn't done all these things? Why did they have like Secret Service level protection? Why didn't they, you know, scan out to 400 yards like they do, or, you know, 800 yards or whatever the safety bubble is for a president? He's like, well, he wasn't a president. He was just a guy that was sitting and talking to college kids. And in theory, in America, and you know, this is the other reason why I was arguing against the whole people that were talking about it being a professional assassination and all this other kind of stuff, because there were a bunch of people, including FBI agents that are retired, going out on, you know, semi-reputable or mainstream news, you know, and they were saying, oh, this is a professional assassination. Meaning what? That this person who did this makes a living doing this thing? They make a living how? Because how many rifle shots from over 100 yards away, and that's not a far shot, obviously, for anybody who does any shooting, but how many 100 to 500 yard rifle shot assassinations are you familiar with? Like, let's say in the globe on any given year. Can you make a living doing that? I don't think you can. It's not a professional hit. It's the same problem with the Luigi Maggioni thing. It's like people don't kill people that way in this country. Nation states certainly don't do it. You know, they have ways of making you disappear and then they leak the story. I think Saudi Arabia got away with getting rid of a journalist that way. That was pretty ugly. They talked about, you know, dismembering and acid barrels and this kind of stuff. And so you have this horrific version, and they told a real horrific story. Don't go against what our crown says. You know, there are other countries, and Israel does assassinations for sure. The United States has carried out assassinations. They try to make it look like nobody did it. You know, the key to doing those types of things is to make sure that they're deniable. And it's not done with the patsy the way that they might have done it in the 1960s. That's just not the game. And if we don't believe, if we believe that the Kennedy assassination was all set up, and there's a million people that have a lot of thoughts on this way more than I do, I can't put my brain power into it, because no matter what I discover, it's not going to matter. for the way I live my life. So I just kind of have moved on. I accept that I don't trust our government in general. And at the same time, that this is not the way that they do business. You know, they set up a car crash. They poison your steak. You'll have a heart attack.
You'll slip over.
Yeah. Or any number of other things.
So what are your thoughts on,
go ahead.
I want to ask you specifically, what are your thoughts on some of the recent Truth Social posts from Trump about Bondi that imply that he's not so happy with her?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. I've had some friends send me text messages quietly and say, you know, is this like early onset dementia? What's going on here? Was this just a senior moment where he thought he was sending a text message? And in reality, he was, accidentally sending it out on True Social to the entire world. I do think that he should have an understanding of the imminence. And I think that when you're in Trump's bubble, it seems like nobody should give him bad news. That's what we kind of see a lot. That giving Trump bad news is not a good way to operate. He needs a lot more people to push back and tell him about bad news. And some of it needs to come from, I don't know, people that don't mind being scolded and told that he's angry about it, because he needs to hear that we only have a certain amount of time in this administration. And right now, Trump is essentially a speed bump to a lot of the evil agenda. You talked about why we didn't have anything from Matthew Crooks. I think a lot of it came from the fact that the Biden administration was running things, which means the FBI was running itself. And has been for years. They've basically been on kind of a runaway train since 9/11, where the Bureau basically said, we are an intelligence, you know, apparatus. And if we want to censor people, which they did, you know, we found out in the Twitter files and so on, like a lot of these reveals that have discredited the agency, they've been going on for a long time. People may or may not have been aware of it, but we got really, really aware of it over the last 4 years and 5 years with some really overt actions. And some whistleblower activity, of which I had a little bit to do with, you know, the fact that people know things. I have people come at me one time and they'll say things like, Serafin, you know, how many parents at school board meetings did you spy on? It's like, hey, a-hole, like I'm the reason you know about that. Like, what are you talking about? I put the memo out there in the hands of Congress. You know, they'll ask like, how many Catholics do you investigate? First of all, I'm Catholic. Second of all, I published the original piece that let people know that they were spying on Catholics. By the way, they're still doing that as far as we can tell. The Blaze just did a piece I think 2 weeks ago. That showed that they actually have an ongoing investigation in Louisiana into a traditional Catholics men's group that is quote unquote anti-secular. So this is not fixed. You know, none of this stuff is fixed at this point. So we're in this real weird moment where these agencies have been operating rogue and they've been doing it for a long time. Yeah. We know that they've been doing it. People want to know more. I think the only way you get credibility back is like by sharing information, but it should also come down to the point where Kash Patel also put out a couple of days ago, I think it was either yesterday or the day before, he said, I'm congratulating all the new analysts that we just hired on at the FBI. Like, well, what happened to the guy that said the problem was the Intel branch and he was going to, you know, shut down that shop and send him out and have cops be cops and all this kind of stuff. So all the same instincts that exist inside government, they're still there. The question is can, you know, can Trump do something to understand that this speed bump is not it? We needed a pretty aggressive U-turn. My wife referred to it as like a plane. If they adjust their loss in altitude, so you're losing altitude a little bit slower, you still hit the side of the mountain until you pull up and actually gain enough where you got to clear the peak. And I don't think that we've pulled up enough. So maybe some of these text messages are showing that that is getting through, that Donald Trump himself is understanding, like, you know, people are cherry coding a lot of this stuff to me, but it's not happening. Like, we're not getting fixes fast enough. And that may be, you know, very demanding, but that's the only way that this country doesn't turn around immediately the next time a Democrat comes in. I get a bunch of my buddies that send me text messages. What are the odds that Turning Point USA, that a TPUSA predicated investigation is launched in the first 6 months of the Gavin Newsom presidency? That's your worst case scenario that people should consider. Mm. Gavin Newsom becomes president. Do they immediately categorize InfoWars as a domestic terrorism threat and therefore listeners to InfoWars?
Well, I mean, they already did that in December 10th of 2013.
I agree.
You know, the FBI's already classified us.
How fast does that turn into predicated investigation into listeners, not just into, let's say, you or Alex or Owen or anybody else that's out there that's got InfoWars on their resume at any period in time? You know, Joe Biggs could be on that list for all we know. So the question then becomes, When do those predicated DT investigations start kicking out for Turning Point USA? And my buddy asked me very pointedly, he's like, you think 6 months into a Newsom presidency? And it's like, well, I hope not. I hope that we dismantle the weapon system, which is what I've always been about. I'm not about politics in the partisan sense. I'm about, let's have our government not have the tools to come after us in the way that it does. Let's at least make them rebuild the damn gun so they can't just turn around and point it right at us and fire it at us. you know, the minute that it changes hands. Wouldn't it be nice if they had to go find ammunition and make sure that the, you know, the bore sight was correct and all the other kind of things that need to be done? Should you really hand them a completely loaded functional weapon system simply because we had an election turnover? It's maybe that's what these text messages are. I hope they are. I hope we don't go back into Bagram, by the way. I don't want to see the United States invade Afghanistan. People don't know that. That's one of the things he said. And he said the United States, you know, that Bagram airfield needs to be handed back to the United States who built it. It's like, well, the Soviets did build it. That's kind of not great information he's got there.
What do you think?
I understand the instinct.
What do you think's next for Cash and, Cash and Bongino at the FBI?
Man, I think Bongino's out still. Like, you know, people got, they heard me say this. I told this to Alex early on. I think that they've got this year to basically run out. I think the most likely thing is that Bongino leaves by Thanksgiving. He's waiting for an easy exit. This case obviously doesn't help them because it was very, you know, prominent and public. And you've noticed he's jumped back in the media a little bit and he had that big fallout. I don't think they forget about that. And I don't think it makes him any happier about doing the job. I've talked to people about what the FBI deputy director job is. It's like 16 plus hours a day. It's miserable. And you notice that they turned around and dropped everything and went and did sort of publicity stunts in Utah. Well, who did they leave back in Washington, D.C. to run the shop? They left Andrew Bailey.
Yeah, their boy that they just hired. Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting oriented and he's getting squared away. So a couple little kind of bits of, we'll drop this kind of as inside info. My instinct is that Cash Patel may be still done there. I don't know that they keep him around as a director with Andrew Bailey being the co number two. I don't think he even sticks around just to be the number two. He was Trump's original first pick. So I'm staying with my analysis on this. You know, it's not like tomorrow you're going to wake up and see this happens. I think that sometime maybe January, you know, Cash gets promoted to ambassador of Somalia or whatever the heck they send people off to. He gets the Bob Long treatment where you get to go off and go be an ambassador somewhere else because you're already sworn in by Congress and you've already been confirmed by the Senate for something. So I think that actually carries over. But I think Andrew Bailey is the right guy. And it does sound like that's the thing we're hearing inside the Bureau too. They're not leaking information. People that are Bureau sources of mine and of my friends are not hearing about Andrew Bailey. And that's a really, really critical difference that has changed in the last, let's say, 5-6 years. People have been more than happy to badmouth Jim Comey when it made sense. They were more than happy to badmouth Chris Wray. They were more than happy to badmouth Cash Patel right away. Like they do not mind talking about it. But what you see is that when the FBI director is respected by the people in there and they see him as a potential person who could actually add some stability to the agency, and I, you know, like it or not, FBI agents that are good and FBI agents that are bad do not want to walk around and be disrespected. You know, nobody wants to go work for a company that people think is garbage. And so they all have sort of a vested interest in seeing a restored or a slightly more credible or, you know, even very much more credible FBI. Patel's not getting it done. He's certainly upset plenty of people on the left and people on the right with the Epstein file situation, with any number of other things, like even him getting injected into this. The Valhalla comment the other day was silly and weird. So there's a lot of things that he does that are more influencer style. They need someone quiet. Sure. You know, Chris Wray used to go into a restaurant and nobody knew who he was. I sat in a meeting in the Washington field office when we were waiting for Chris Wray. So lest you understand, the meeting was Chris Wray was going to come and address 75 or 80 of us. And so we're waiting for the director of the FBI to walk in and he walked past me and he was, I don't know, 6 feet away and I didn't know who it was. And I didn't realize it was Chris Wray until his security detail went by. He just was not that much of a larger than life person. If you go into an event where Cash Patel's at and there's people that are conservatives, they know who he is. You know, he gets handshakes and high fives and sign my hat or whatever the heck it is. So he's a figure. That's not traditionally what's going to be successful in the FBI. Like you shouldn't recognize the FBI director if he's shopping next to you at Target. Unless you're just like a complete nerd or you just retired from the FBI. That's pretty much the only excuses you get. I think that Andrew Bailey doesn't have that kind of face and name recognition and he has the potential of restoring some of that. And it seems like the people in the Bureau think the same thing. And I don't think he got brought in there for nothing. He had the potential of being either the next governor of the state or he had the potential of being a national political figure. He could have run for Congress. His predecessor made it into the Senate in Eric Schmidt. I don't think you go in there to be a no-name co-number two of the FBI permanently because you can't name the last 5 deputy directors of the FBI and neither can most of your audience because they just don't know. It's just not a place. Nobody launches from being deputy director of the FBI to being anything else. They just go work security somewhere at Disney.
What do you think's next for TPUSA with Erica Kirk at the helm?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. And I told you this. This is the difference between maybe me and some of the people that are kind of in the GOP camp, and whatever happens, like, we cheer it on. I just can't get excited about a woman who lost her husband and has two babies going and running a huge national organization. And it's not because of the organization, and it's not because I wish anything ill. It's because I wish that she had peace and time to be with her children and to grieve. And I wish that she has the ability to raise them and to honor the memory of their father. To, like, I don't want her running that, but not because I care one way or another about TPUSA. I just look as a mother who lost something. If I was gone, I wouldn't want my wife to step in and do my podcast. You know what I mean? I would hope that family surrounded her and that they lift up my children and that she has a chance to get
I think there's room for both. I think she's going to have time to mourn, and then I think she's going to want to get activated. The reason I was optimistic to hear it is because I know she's at least going to not intentionally subvert the purpose and the message of the organization. Yeah. She might mess it up. I don't know how competent she is or not, but it seems very unlikely to me that she would sell out TPUSA to any other interest other than honoring what Charlie would have liked to have seen it.
I don't see her doing a sellout of anything. Obviously, I agree with you on that. I think that the principle and trying to honor her husband, my concern is like, I think children are far more important than some political organization, and creating good citizens is like the most important thing. So I at the end of the day, people like give me a hard time because like my wife and I are pretty radical about a lot of things on there. One of them is that my wife has more education than me. She has two master's degrees and she spent a bunch of time in education and she doesn't use them. She, you know, homeschools our kids and she makes sourdough bread and she does all the things that you hear the trad influencer wives doing. She actually does all those things. We mill our own grains in our house because she saw some lady doing it. And she was like, I think we should, you know, take that in. So we buy sacks of, you know, wheat berries and stuff like that. So I'm whole hog in. And this was the deal that I made with her when we got married. When she first told me she was pregnant, I was actually at the FBI Academy of all things. And, she said, you know, I don't know about working my job and having a baby. And I said, if you don't want to do anything except raise babies, then I'm going to make that happen. So that's the version of conservatism that I believe in, that I think that there are things that are far more important than Turning Point USA. And I think raising babies is it. And that's not what everybody thinks. And, you know, so when I see women, you know, I have this online joke when women will scold me or criticize me or something, I just say, put your husband on the phone because I think it says exactly what I think in kind of a, like a snarky way. I actually think that there are better things for women to spend their time in than politics. And that is raising this generation. But, you know, I wish her success. I don't wish her anything ill. I also wish that there was a way that somebody else could do it, but she didn't have to be burdened with it, so she could do the thing that I think is far more important, which is putting citizens that understand and teaching your kids the legacy and not being distracted. Because listen, being in charge of, like, even having a regular job is distracting. I can't fathom what it would be like. Her husband was on the road 200, 250 days a year, from what I understand. You know, and he took that burden on and he offered that up. I would say he wasn't just a martyr in the Christian sense. I think he was a martyr for America with it. He was trying to proselytize American values and discourse. And that's huge. It's a big thing. And men can do that as long as there's someone there that you can know when you get back home, they're keeping the hearth warm and they're making sure that the children have all the things they need. So I fear for her. You know what I mean? If that makes sense, it comes from a place of truly looking at what is the unique proposition that a mother offers? And they've got one parent away. I would hate to see I hope that they've got good grandparents that are involved. You know, anyway, I'm very, very cautious about all of it. And all that comes from a place of just looking at it as a dad. Just like I said, the human cost of this is horrific. And they're so young, you know, she's like a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. My wife and I have this ongoing theory that like maybe kids should be around their mom and their dad for the first 4 years without any other sort of daycare and other stuff like that. So we've really aggressively set our life up to do that. And it costs us some things. Like, I don't own the house I'm in because I can't afford to live in the house and also live by those principles, but I think that's worth it. I wish her the best. And I listened to some of the speech and I couldn't listen to all of it because it's like, it's too raw for me right now to think about that. And to think about making those decisions in this moment of grief. Yeah, she's activated 100%. And I understand that rage is probably really, really strong. I hope other people are willing to step in good faith and do that. And so she can do things that I think are hopefully way more important, and she can fill the role of mom, because nobody else can do that. You know, so other people could run Turning Point USA, I think. And I'm sure that there are people there that as long as she's involved in the decision-making process, it'll work out.
Kyle, we've just got about 4.5 minutes left together. What else would you like to leave with the audience?
And I hope people do. We started it, and I'll end it the same way we started it. I hope people, when they say that, you know, that they're Charlie Kirk, that they actually take it and they take that as a challenge to themselves. So maybe I'll go back to this message. Look, this message is as old as time. It's as good as any, the idea of red and white martyrdom. You're probably not called to go lose your life for your faith. You're probably not called to lose your life for your country. The odds are is that you may get called to lose something that you don't necessarily want to lose. It might cost you something, to do the right thing and to stand up for whatever your values are, whether it be your faith or whether it be your political values and whether it be what you know is actually true. You don't have to do it in a mean way. I think Charlie Kirk's legacy is that he went out and he disagreed with people politely, but he didn't suffer lies. And so when I see all these folks that are hashtagging it and they're adding to their bio, and a lot of I've seen major influencer accounts that keep putting this kind of stuff out. They say, I'm just so shocked that this man was murdered, and maybe they didn't even know him the way that I met him once, I think one time for just a few minutes. So I get it, because it does. It affects you, and it can make you really sick to your stomach just thinking about there's a person who didn't seem to mean any harm, but he stood on principle. So what principles are you willing to stand on? This should be a reminder for a lot of people, I think, of the second chance that we got after we escaped whatever that COVID outcome could have been. There's a, I think it's on Amazon right now. I'm watching the show. I just finished watching it. It's terrible. It's a terrible movie about like COVID-23. So it was like the next iteration of COVID for a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And they continued on the nonsense of keeping people locked down and keeping them away from their families and all this kind of stuff. And nobody stood up and just said, hey, this is ridiculous. Like, I'd rather die with my loved ones than see them die behind plate glass and die alone. And you remember they were taking warm gloves full of water. You remember seeing this, Chase?
Yeah, so people felt like they were holding a real human hand.
They were faking human connections as people died alone behind glass. And so like that moment was a moment for when everyone should have said no, and we didn't. And you've got a very visceral connection, because a violent murder is something that can also shock people. It's not slow creeping government rollout of now your pizza shop is not open. It's like somebody was snuffed out and we all got to see it from five different angles of cell phones and a bunch of people were there live. And so maybe that can shock certain people and to remember, you know, draw a red line in the sand. You know, this is sort of preachy, but I mean, this is what my family and I decided. It's like, okay, we are not going to backpedal behind this line. We accept no more encroachment against our own personal freedoms. It means we don't have family members that speak to us, that my wife has lost people that were really dear to her, that will not pick up the phone and talk to her, that have said, because of the way that your husband speaks out loud, we will not be in your presence. It's an ongoing source of, you know, sadness for her. Like once a week, there's tears. There have to be. So it costs you something. And so if you understand that and you want to say, and you want to put that little hashtag in your bio and you want this to be the moment that you wake up, if you want it to turn, then you have to realize that the other side of it is it's going to cost you something pretty soon. Somebody's going to come and challenge you on it. And if you're not ready to accept that cost, then you're not ready. So steal your heart.
Right.
And get your house in order so that you know that it's coming. And when it does, you just accept that these are the consequences. I signed up for this. This is what I bit off. I'm ready to chew on it.
Brilliant words from Kyle Serafin. Thank you so much for joining us, Kyle. It's always an honor and a pleasure. Make sure you follow him over on X. And we've got about 1 minute left, and I just want to use this last minute to say to you that, look, if you feel like you don't have a voice, then Alex Jones has a voice for you. InfoWars has a voice for you. If you feel like your vote is not enough and you want a voice, that's what InfoWars is for. And if you're going to go around and you're going to wear an I Am Charlie Kirk shirt, or if you're going to post it and you wish that you could do more and sacrifice more to fight the same evil that Charlie fought, then in my opinion, one of the best ways to do that is to support us at thealexjonesstore.com. We're not seeking to exploit his assassination or his death. We are literally all in on freedom, humanity, and good versus evil. Please support us right now at thealexjonesstore.com. We have a sale ending tonight. All orders, no matter how big or small, you get a free tinfoil hat kit from thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, these supplements are incredible for your health. Go now, buy something, and be the reason Alex will always be on the air. Thank you.
Oh, here it is. Bovine Colostrum Plus. This is what I was looking for. This is the only thing that works on a monstrous stomach like mine. If it works for me, it will work for you. Order yours at the website below.
Secret shoreline mission to handpick nature's vitamin-packed sea moss before the globalists patent it. He's scooping it up like it's Cyber Monday in the supplement aisle. But suddenly, a 20-foot-tall sea moss mutant erupts from the tide pool like Godzilla. Alex dashes like he just saw a new Fauci vaccine. Will he make it or become the monster's meal? To be continued.